it. I thought it was going to be even tougher. It was pretty nasty, actually.
There's a lot of people who love me. They just won't vote for me, but it's okay.
Well, let me tell you, everyone at CPAC, flexible is code word in Washington, D.C. for they're getting ready to stick it to you.
I'm leaving the campaign trail. Yeah.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:10. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Opening Bell for Monday. It's March 7th, 2016. We'll get right to your market intel from around the world this morning. As you heard Vic say, most of the Asian stock markets are a little higher today. Mixed in Europe as Beijing cut its growth target for a cooling economy and promised more market opening reforms. The Shanghai Index, Hong Kong's Hang Seng, and Seoul's Kospi advanced, while markets in Tokyo, Singapore, and Jakarta retreated. On Friday, you'll remember the Dow Jones Industrials rose about 63 points, or about 0.4%, 17,007. The S&P 500 was up about 7 points, or 0.3%, to 1,200. The NASDAQ edged up about 10 points, to 47.17. The economy day ahead, investors are hoping today brings a better vote of the of confidence in the U.S. economy. We're expecting the Federal Reserve will release consumer credit data for January. Also today, the bulk of business economists expect the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates this year, but their views on the Fed policy are divided. The survey by the National Association of Business Economists finds that 75% of respondents expect the Federal Open Market Committee to raise its target for federal funds rate above the current level by year's end 2016. That view is roughly on par with the last survey that was conducted back in August. Elsewhere today, China's finance minister says Beijing's expanding deficit spending to prevent a slide in growth and support its efforts to overhaul its cooling economy. The minister said today that the deficit target of 3% of gross domestic product, up from last year's 2.3%, was in line with the Communist Party plans to nurture slower, more self-sustaining growth. Gas prices today. The average price of gasoline has jumped by about 7 cents over the last 2 weeks. It's now at an average of $1.84 a gallon in the U.S. Industry analyst Trilby Lundberg said yesterday that despite the increase, the price is about 70 cents per gallon cheaper than a year ago. Well, you heard in the opening bell there the politics of today. Donald Trump speaking over the weekend. Ben Carson out of the race now. We had the Democrats last night debating again. What impact does the politics of the nation have on the economy? If Donald Trump is elected, if Hillary Clinton is elected, what would their policies do to the economy? We're going to start this morning with Heather Long of CNN Money, who's written about this. Good morning, Heather. How are you?
Good morning.
It's always good to have you on the opening bell. You can find Heather, by the way, on Twitter at @ByHeatherLong, @ByHeatherLong. You've focused a little on Donald Trump here. Is his policies, and we'll talk a little bit about Hillary, too, before people get upset about this if they're Donald Trump supporters, but his compared to Hillary seems to be a little bit more dangerous. Is that the word? Or potentially reckless for the economy?
Well, that's certainly what Mitt Romney said last week, and HP Enterprise CEO Meg Whitman. There was that huge push, anti-Trump push last week as we head into some of these critical contests where many in the GOP establishment would like to see Cruz or Rubio take away some steam here from Trump so we can possibly get into a brokered convention. So it's interesting. I mean, Mitt Romney kind of tried to throw the ultimate insult. He was really the first last week to come out strongly and say, literally, Donald Trump, if elected president, would cause a recession. So I tried to step back and say, well, what would Trump do that would cause a recession? And the number one fear everyone seems to have is, you know, almost every speech Trump gives, what does he focus on? We need to stock it to China and to Mexico and to other countries that we trade with. He brings up constantly that the United States has a trade deficit overall with these countries and that we need to renegotiate with them. And basically, we need to put tariffs on their goods, so some sort of fee or tax on all that stuff that we bring in from China and Mexico. And in order to try to restart our own middle class manufacturing jobs. So a lot of people, a lot of CEOs and the executives, particularly of global companies like HP Enterprise, are very nervous about that. The first thing they talk about when they're asked about Trump's economic policies, they say, look, you know, that would cause a massive global trade war, and that would sink not just the U.S. economy, but potentially other parts of the world.
And the wall, building the wall is something that he mentions quite a bit as well. These things all have prices to them, don't they?
Yeah, as he likes to talk about that $10 billion wall. Mexico, it's interesting with Mexico. We've been talking a lot about trade lately in our office. And overall, Trump's right. The number he often cites on the campaign trail is, you know, we run at least about a $58 billion deficit with Mexico when we trade with them every year. And so, of course, they should foot the bill for this wall, right? Because they're getting all this money, apparently, from the United States. But I think what's interesting that people don't perhaps think about unless you dig into the trade data more is that the United States, under the goods that we actually have trade agreements so that fall under the North American trade, the NAFTA plan, for instance, we actually run a surplus with Mexico on the goods and items that fall under the trade agreement we've made. So the argument from policy people and business people is, look, yes, we're running a deficit overall, mainly because we still import energy from Mexico. But when it comes to, say, the manufacturing sector, we actually run a slight surplus with Mexico and other countries that we have, or most countries that we have a trade agreement, free trade agreement with.
We're talking with Heather Long of CNN Money, and we'll get back to our conversation after we check traffic this morning. But we'll talk about generally the unpredictable nature of Trump and how that sort of leans on the economy, which doesn't really like unpredictableness, if that's a word. Also coming up, we're going to be talking a little bit about the jobs report last week as the opening bell continues. But right now, the roads. Welcome back from vacation, Mary Vandeville.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Most Asian stock markets rose today after Beijing cut its growth target for its cooling economy and promised more market opening reforms. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ all closed higher. Investors will be looking for another sign of economic improvement today when the Federal Reserve releases consumer credit data for January. Consumer demand was solid. The government said on Friday that hiring was outpacing projections. United Continental says CEO Oscar Munoz will return to the helm at the airline full-time later this month. Munoz took medical leave after he suffered a heart attack in October, just 6 weeks into the job. He then had a heart transplant in January. And you may not know the name Ray Tomlinson, but chances are you used his greatest innovation in the last few minutes. Tomlinson invented the modern email system. He even came up with the at symbol to join the username with the destination. Ray Tomlinson has died at age 74. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell. It's 522. We're having a conversation this morning with Heather Long of CNN Money, at By Heather Long on Twitter. And Heather, whether it's Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or Ted Cruz, the markets, investors hate the unpredictable. And I guess if you had to rank these candidates by their unpredictableness, Donald Trump would be way at the top, right?
Off the charts, yeah. I think you're right, Steve. that's exactly right. The other thing I find fascinating, so not only do you look at Trump and you say, you know, he just will say just about anything, and it's you know, possibly start a trade war with other countries, but yet I was calling around last week to various businesses and investment executives, and the sentiment that's starting to build there, I mean, there's certainly some concern about fear about these policies, as Mitt Romney and Meg Whitman encapsulated last week. But honestly, people are asking, would he really do what he said? And that's fascinating, because not only are they worried about his unpredictability, now they don't even know, like, they keep, I think one investment professional put it really well to me. He was like, what is Donald Trump most concerned about? Usually it's his image. His image as a great businessman. And they just keep thinking, would he really enact all these policies that would be so negative for business? So I'm fascinated by that kind of dynamic that I'm starting to hear chatter around.
We have the jobs report from last week. The economy seems to be chugging along. Everything seems to be going well generally in the economy. How disastrous can it be, or how much of an impact, negative or positive, can the change in administrations be when we go through this political cycle for the markets and the economy?
Right. I mean, that's really a huge debate in the economic field. Somebody asked me today, like, could the presidents really have any impact on the economy? You know, in isolation, the White House can do something. So they negotiate trade deals. You know, they help enforce policies. So there's always a lot of talk about, say, if Hillary Clinton or certainly Bernie Sanders were elected. We heard a lot of talk in this CNN debate last night about how they would want to expand the role of the Environmental Protection Agency and, you know, expand the role of Wall Street regulation by various agencies. So they can kind of do things around the edge, you might say, like that. But in terms of the bulk things that you could do for the economy, whether it's do more government spending to try to stimulate the economy or cut back government spending to try to stimulate the economy, that all needs to go through Congress. And so that's kind of your reality check benchmark at this point. I think when people look either at the Democratic side or the Republican side and what they might consider some of the more extreme policies towards business, they just think not going to get through Congress right now.
Although we do see, you know, this president has used the executive order quite a bit. There are some of these things. Can some of these things that, for instance, Trump, some of his proposals be done by executive order and sort of circumvent the Congress?
I mean, yeah, that's certainly the fear. I think you hit it right on the head. And again, trade is one of those areas where you usually have to get it approved at the end of the day by Congress. But the president gets a lot of leeway to negotiate trade deals. So, yeah, I think that's why so many executives are zeroed in on that particular point that he brings up a lot.
I know we saw the event last week by Mitt Romney and Meg Whitman, but has the Wall Street types, the investors types, have they settled on a candidate? Do they have a favorite?
No, you're right. It's fascinating right now because as they look across, they see Hillary Clinton, and there wasn't a whole lot of tax talk last night, very different from Republican debate. But she's been very clear, right, that she wants to raise the capital gains tax on high earners, that she wants to change the way that carried interest is done, which helps a lot of the hedge fund managers and private equity managers when it comes to their tax time, that she wants to get rid of those favorable laws that help them get taxed at a lower rate than some of their secretaries, the old joke goes from Warren Buffett. And then on top of that, both she and certainly Bernie Sanders has pulled her farther out on this. She's talking a lot tougher about regulating Wall Street banks, possibly even putting a fee on the big banks. So the J.P. Morgans and the Wells Fargos of the world would actually have to pay a fee for being a, quote, big bank over $1 billion. She's been talking about as the threshold. So, yeah, you look at her and you think, gee, there's certainly going to be an impact there, more cost to the financial system. But then, as you say, you counterbalance that with Trump, and they think, you know, there's this debate in this executive circles. What do you really do half the things he says? And that's about unpredictability 101.
Heather Long is a senior stock market and economy writer at CNN Money. You can find her on Twitter at @ByHeatherLong. Heather, great of you to be with us on the opening bell as always.
Yeah. Happy trading.
Happy day. And it's only March. I have a feeling we're going to be having this discussion again about politics and the economy. It's, again, only March. It's 5:27. This is the opening bell on WGN. Let's head over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn standing by. Vic, what's coming up?
Steve, a local candidate who's running for Illinois House has some pretty dark accusations this morning. Dark if they're true. Against a pair of workers for his rival's camp. Some altercation right outside his campaign office last night here in Chicago. So, politics, rough game, huh? We'll have that coming up.
All right. Thanks, Vic. We'll check in with you in a minute. It's 5:28 on the opening bell.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, a self-driving shuttle coming to a college campus near you.
Awesome.
A small California startup called Varden Labs is testing a 4-seat electric shuttle. The small vehicle, which looks a lot like a golf cart, is taking students around Mount San Antonio College on a pre-programmed loop.
And it has a laser scanner.
And while its build is driverless, which it is, Varden's Michael Scoopian says it has no steering wheel, so the shuttle still needs a human to hold down a trigger on the joystick.
So this is called a dead man switch. Basically, if anything were to go wrong, I would let go of that switch,
and the vehicle will immediately come to a stop.
The company's goal is to eventually lease the automated shuttles to colleges starting sometime in 2017. And because they'll only operate on private roads, they can actually dump the human on the controls if the school says it's okay. But are students ready for a robot shuttle?
You know, we'll let everyone else try it.
Get all the bugs out first.
And then we'll try
it. And then we'll try it.
I don't even know what it is.
With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to the program. Affordable living in Lincoln Park, Chicago. Is it even still possible? Mina Bloom has written about this on DNA Info Chicago, and she's with us this morning on The Opening Bell. You can follow Mina on Twitter at Mina_Bloom_. Good morning, Mina. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. This is a concerning piece that you've written here that developers and buyers are snatching up all that's left of affordable living in Lincoln Park. Has it all but disappeared, or is there time to turn this around?
You know, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I think, the fact that Lincoln Park isn't affordable, that's nothing new, right? I mean, we've seen mega mansions in Lincoln Park rising for quite some time now. But my story in particular is kind of about the multi-unit buildings. And, when we think of, 20-somethings, 30-somethings, living in a neighborhood, generally we're talking about people who live in an apartment in a two-flat, three-flat. Those are the types of buildings that are ceasing to exist at Lincoln Park, those multi-unit buildings. And last year was actually a year where developers and other buyers were snatching up those buildings, those multi-unit buildings, at a rapid pace.
So those units that you described, they always seem to be available when you look for an apartment. There's something to choose from generally. There's the quality of it might vary. But are you saying that these developers are turning these into condos and taking them completely off the market? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, these developers are turning them into condos and charging a lot more for them. In other cases, they're tearing them down altogether and they're making huge mega mansions. In some cases they're actually land banking, which is where they'll buy a property and then they'll wait until the neighboring properties go on sale and they'll build a huge mansion across several lots. So this is what's happening a lot of the time. It doesn't happen all the time. Some of these multi-unit buildings will remain the way they were, but a lot of them, will be turned into pricier condos. That's what a lot of developers are doing, is that they're changing the feel of the buildings, rehabbing them, and then ultimately charging more for them.
And so what is concerning, at least from your piece, is that some of these multi-unit buildings are being turned into one-owner McMansions, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
Is it pushing, where is it pushing people to that are, in the younger set that's trying to find this housing? Is there even any place left in Lincoln Park to look at, or are they being pushed to surrounding neighborhoods?
I do think people are being pushed to surrounding neighborhoods. I don't know, I know from being in Lincoln Park a lot and speaking with folks who live in Lincoln Park, it's hard to walk down a Lincoln Park street and not see some type of construction going on. The homes are constantly under construction, and realtors that I've spoken to feel the same way. There's construction happening everywhere in Lincoln Park on so many different homes. And I think people who are looking for, an affordable home in Lincoln Park, I really don't know, where that is anymore. And like I said, it's really nothing new. This has been happening for a long time. But, as far as the multi-unit buildings go, this is a really interesting trend to look at, because we're really seeing that that this demand for real estate in Lincoln Park is only going up.
What is the impact of taking the younger set out of Lincoln Park, out of these units? Is it a less demand, less availability for positions, for jobs? Are we going to see a different neighborhood come out of this? I mean, what are the potential impacts?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I think we we really do have a neighborhood right now today, currently, that, you know, it is a family neighborhood. You know, I can even speak from personal experience, and maybe, you know, I'm 27 years old, and I think maybe 5-6 years ago, I had several friends who lived in Lincoln Park in their early 20s, and that is not the, I mean, I don't think that that those people, you know, still would live in this neighborhood. I think that it's just not affordable for a lot of young folks and people and other people looking for affordable housing. So I, you know, and when I say affordable housing, I don't mean affordable housing in the way that the city calls it, you know, affordable housing as far as, you know, income is concerned. I just mean, you know, housing that is affordable relatively, you know, to other neighborhoods in the city. So, you know, it's hard to say what the true impact will be because, as I said, I think that this has been happening for a long time, and I don't think that there are a lot of folks out there who, you know, I don't think that this is anything particularly new, but I do think that with the multi-unit buildings going at such a rapid pace, you know, we're continuing to see this happen in Lincoln Park, and it is not dying down by any means. So, you know, the more that we get rid of those multi-unit buildings, the more that, you know, people just can't afford to live there anymore.
Your story actually points out some of the prices that are these developers are getting for some of these buildings when they sell them, these multi-unit buildings. It's, and what has changed over the years is that price. I mean, it's gone steadily higher, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. It went from, you know, over the last 5 years, and in 2011, it was the median price of a multi-unit building was about $615,000, and now in 2015, it's gone up to $908,000. So it's gone up pretty steadily over the last 5 years. And from a realtor's perspective, you know, some of this is really good to see. This neighborhood is still highly desirable for buyers and for developers. So I think and it's good for the real estate market as well. So some, you know, it's not all bad.
Mina Bloom is a writer for DNA Info Chicago. You can find her on Twitter at @Mina_Bloom_, and we'll send out the link to her story about affordable living in Lincoln Park going away. Mina, it's good of you to be up with us on the Opening Bell this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's 5:45 on 720 WGN. Let's get an update now on traffic. Here's Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49. The Dow futures pointing downward this morning. Dow futures off 48. The S&P futures off about 8. NASDAQ futures off about 20. The price of oil is trading up this morning. Pre-market trade, price of gold and silver also higher. Let's get some more on the commodities this morning. And here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. And as we take a look at where we ended the market activity last Friday, live cattle contracts at the Mercantile Exchange moved up on Friday, cutting some of the recent losses because investors are still waiting to see the cash cattle prices come closer to the futures prices. And all of the livestock futures ended the week higher on Friday with the April hog contract at $70.97 a hundredweight, a gain of 62 cents on Friday. The April live cattle contract gained 97 cents Friday to end at $136.42. And the April feeder cattle contract up $1.15 to end the trading week last week, and that put the April contract at $158.07. So you all have a good day and a good week. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. On Friday, the government reported that employers added about 242,000 jobs to the economy. Consumer demand was solid. The government also said employers hired more people in December and January than it had previously estimated. More people also out looking for work. ABC News correspondent Aaron Kuchersky is on the line with us from New York. And Aaron, this was just another good snapshot of an economy that seems to be churning along.
Oh, it does. The headline number is certainly strong. 242,000 jobs created in February is far more than was expected. The U.S. economy was expected to mellow out a little bit, go into a period of jobs growth, but less than what the average over 200,000 had been lately. But February stayed strong, and December and January ended up creating more jobs than previously thought. So the economy is still chugging along. I guess the other half of the story is that a lot of the jobs are still, you know, hourly, retail, restaurants that rely on tips and maybe not as high paying as some of the workers who got them would like.
As a matter of fact, the wage part of this ingredient was down, is off, and that's a little concerning. Is there any kind of hope for those people who have jobs or getting jobs that might change soon, or is that a downward trend that might continue?
Well, it may be that wages, you know, are due for an increase, and we thought that was going to be the trend. You know, January wages were up 12 cents. It was a big jump from where they'd been. And here in February, they're down 3 cents, and that may be an outlier. But there's no question that everybody wants to see higher wages. It would, you know, bump up consumer spending, no doubt. But I think the good news here is that even among some of the recent headwinds, the decline in China, the stronger dollar, weaker oil prices, American businesses are still showing an interest in hiring. Mining and manufacturing were weak spots. That was predicted, at least on the mining side. Manufacturing economists would certainly like to see a bump back up, but other sectors were doing pretty well.
So if you're out looking for a job, what can this report tell people about where to look, what sectors to look for?
Healthcare has been a strong source of jobs, more than 38,000 of them in February. Construction companies added 19,000. And then restaurants and bars, 40,000 jobs, and retailers were added almost 55,000 jobs last month. And that kind of hiring associated with consumer spending has been enough to offset layoffs, in mining and manufacturing. And those sectors have lately been squeezed.
When you look at the graph of this going back to the beginning of President Obama's term, because that's what a lot of people are looking at to now, it is a downward cliff. It's sort of like that game on The Price is Right where the guy goes off the thing. It's been on a downward trend ever since he took office, hasn't it? Well, the unemployment rate, that is. I mean, it's been going down pretty steadily, hasn't it, since 2008?
Unemployment rate has gone down steadily since 2008. It's down now to 4.9%. That's an extraordinarily low level and almost considered normal unemployment. And the years of sort of economic weakness and the slow pace of the economic recovery, gave people maybe a sour mood. But in the last 12 months, average hourly earnings have risen. And jobs have gone crazy. More than 228,000 jobs created on average every month for the last 12 months is a really good pace.
Without making it political, I guess I was setting you up for this question, and that is, are we in a delicate balance here as we potentially change administrations with the economy and jobs?
Well, I think that's always a question on the minds of voters, isn't it? Who would be the best steward of the economy? And I think that you've seen people who've said they want to continue the policies of President Obama, and those policies, I suppose the Democratic candidate could argue, have led to an incredibly sustainable period of jobs growth over the past 12 months. There have been 3 million people who've added work and have found jobs over the past 12 months. Certainly not enough, but still a strong pace. And then you could argue that the other side would be, in fact, more robust even than President Obama has been. That's a matter of political argument.
That's it. ABC News correspondent Aaron Kaczorski with us this morning from New York on the jobs report that was issued on Friday. That's the opening bell for today. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back with you bright and early tomorrow morning right here on 720 WGN. Our producer this morning is Mary Sandberg, a production help from Ross Cochran. Ben Cortez is our engineer. Thank you for listening. The Steve Cochran Show is next. It's 5:56.